This is Dan Keller for CKMS News on 102.7 FM, Radio Waterloo. This episode first aired on April 29th, 2021, and features an interview with Skylar Williams, the spokesperson for the 1492 Landback Lane Reclamation Camp on Haudenosaunee Territory at Six Nations in southwest Ontario. In July 2020, while the community was managing the COVID-19 pandemic, including erecting checkpoints to keep non-residents from their reserve lands, some Indigenous folks from Six Nations of the Grand River also took action against continued land theft by housing developers and the nearby town of Caledonia by setting up the 1492 Landback Lane Reclamation Camp. Through court injunctions, lawsuits, a police raid, police intimidation, police violence, $17 million in police spending, and being demonized by settler governments including Haldimand Mayor Ken Hewitt and Ontario Premier Doug Ford, the land reclamation action has continued and the land back movement has grown. On April 20th, 2021, members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy Chiefs Council, alongside spokesperson Skylar Williams, announced the Protect the Tract initiative, declaring a moratorium on development in the Haldimand Tract and a need for real consultation with the community before any projects move forward. This episode features an interview with Skylar Williams, the spokesperson for the 1492 Landback Lane Reclamation Camp on Haudenosaunee Territory at Six Nations in southwestern Ontario. Here today with Skylar Williams, a spokesperson for the 1492 Landback Lane Land Reclamation down at Six Nations. How are you doing today, Skylar?
Oh, things are well. Things are well.
I know you've been here for, what, 9 months now?
Yeah, just this side of 9 months now, yeah.
You want to give us a why you're doing this and a quick rundown of what's been going on?
Yeah, I mean, July 19th was a Sunday evening. And again, everything that we've done has been quite deliberate in the way that we've done things to try and maintain this as a peaceful occupation of our lands. I mean, our lands being 6 miles on either side of the Grand River from the mouth to the source. And on July 19th, we came in on a Sunday night about supper time. You know, we all came and there was about 20 of us that sat down and ordered some pizzas and set up a fire and hung some flags. And we all sat down and ate dinner together, and about an hour and a half later, the cops rolled in. The first question they asked was, you know, how long we intended on being here. And I kind of laughed and said, you know, our people have been here for the last 10,000 years, and we're planning on being here for 10,000 more. And we all kind of got a laugh out of it, and the cops said, well, I guess you're going to be here for a while then. And I said, yeah, it sounds that way. And and he left, and then the developer started a process of an injunction, and he was granted that injunction and without notice to anybody here on the camp. And so the OPP came down on August 2nd to read the injunction the first time. They came and read it, and August 5th, they called and said that they had an amendment to the injunction that they needed to read to everybody. And as they rolled up, the sheriff started reading the injunction, and OPP blocked the roads. They blocked all the roads coming into the camp so that nobody would be able to render any kind of aid to us. The OPP then said we had 15 minutes to clear the camp or you'd be arrested. And as the sheriff was reading, we noticed this long, long line of 25 or so 15-passenger vans rolling up the road. It's a long country road. You can see quite a ways in each direction. And so you just seen this line of cars coming, and the OPP were turning cars around previous to that. And then they just got out of the way, and this big convoy of vans pulled up, and all of these tactically armored OPP guys all got out of those vans and started walking onto the camp. A couple of non-native allies, one young girl was walking up toward the road. As she tried to walk past the OPP line, one very large officer picked her up and slammed her to the ground. And as that happened, a bunch of us took steps forward, and the shots started ringing out. And there was two large guns kind of on either side of the OPP line. And as those guns started being fired, we found out a couple of days, 3 days later, that they were rubber bullets that they were firing at us. But at the time, I think everybody just assumed that they were shooting shotgun rounds at us. And so everybody was a little alarmed by that, to say the least. And as we started backing up, the OPP started arresting people. There were 9 arrests that day. I was one of them. As I got out of jail, as I got out of lockup, somebody ran up to me with a phone and said, "Do you know what's going on the ground down there right now?" And I looked at the phone, and it was a picture of fires and cops being walked off the territory and roadblocks being set up. And so, yeah, there was lots going on. And so I immediately came back down, and we all got together, kind of the same crew that come in here on the first day, and everybody asked, like, "Well, what do we do now?" And we all just kind of collectively said, like, you know, like, let's go back to Landback Lane. We're going back. Like, and then, you know, a couple of people questioned it, of course, and we're like, "There's a lot of cops over there." And somebody was nice enough to have gotten my car, drove it over to where we were on Argyle Street, and we drove around, came back in just like we did on day one. Drove right in the front door, and as we were pulling in, all the cops were pulling out. And we just start back to work, putting our camp back together. Tents went back up. A bunch of our stuff was trashed by the cops. And so it was, yeah, and those were the only 4 hours in the last 9 months that there wasn't Haudenosaunee people at Landback Lane.
And so there was a big response from the community that came out. Absolutely. After the arrest? You know,
hundreds of people came out. There was people on the roads, on the highway, on the train tracks. There was people everywhere. And so it was certainly an amazing gift for us to have the support of our community, and certainly the Confederacy chiefs were amazing in being able to help put people together to make sure that happened.
Sure. In October, there was a little more action with police, some aggressive police that came on and tried to, from what I understand, tried to arrest one of the people that were engaged with the camp. That turned into some pretty serious roadblocks.
Yeah, in the meantime, between October and August, we started fighting the injunction. Right. And so on October 22nd was the kind of the last court date that we had, which seen me barred from being able to represent myself and striking all of the history of the land here at Landback Lane from the record, making sure to put this now permanent injunction on the land here forever, in the court's eyes at least, seeing this land surrendered to non-native squatters. And so this is something that was absolutely unacceptable for us. But as each one of these court dates previous to that were coming up, there was an increased presence of the OPP. And so this day was no different, and having OPP kind of parked at our, what we call the back door, our back trail into the camp. And so they parked there and waited for several of us to arrive. As people were going up to those cops and saying, "Look, you guys just shot at people just a month ago. Like, you guys need to leave. You guys need to leave." And cops persisted that they were going to stay there. And after several people came up to them and asked them to leave, one of the people that they were looking for happened to go up to tell them the same thing, and they all got out. And many, many more showed up within seconds. As they got out of their cars yet again, there was, you know, rubber bullets that were fired. One guy got shot in the back. Another was shot in the back with the taser as they fled from the police with the big guns again. And so as I got there, we had just finished doing a press conference talking about the injunction case. And we got there, and just as it was all unfolding. And so as soon as the door closed down on my car, the gunshots started going off again. But this time the cops were quite freely shooting in many, many directions. And so one of those bullets hit a nearby fire that was going at 6 and 6 that seen, several community members, elders from our community, you know, lying in the dirt because those bullets were flying past their ears, because those bullets were, you know, buzzing around right where they were.
Right.
And so that evening, those road blocks turned into trenches, crossroads, as people commandeered some machinery and made sure that their OPP were not going to be able to utilize these roads any further to you know, inflict more violence on our people who, you know, in every possible instance had shown nothing but peace in our occupation of our lands here.
We've seen the reports of like nearly $17 million being spent over the time that the police have been watching and trying to take action against the site. But at the same time, you decide to take the roadblocks down. What spurred taking the roadblocks down?
You know, and maybe it was foolhardy of us to think that taking down the roadblocks would, in some bit of want to see this be a peaceful resolution to this. And I think we've shown over and over and over again that, like, everything that we can possibly do to maintain this as a peaceful occupation of our lands is exactly what we want to see here. And so for the OPP to continue any of this violent action towards us, it certainly won't be because there's roadblocks or giving any other reason other than us peacefully occupying our lands. And I mean, it's been, you know, kumbaya by the fire here for the last 9 months now. And so it's, it really would strike me very hard if the OPP were going to come and try and enforce something on these lands now that, like, there's absolutely no reason whatsoever to see any kind of police action here.
Right. What do you think of the $17 million in spending from the police?
You know what? It would have cost $60 in gas round trip from Queen's Park, maybe $120 from Ottawa. And this could have been dealt with in a peaceful way that wouldn't have seen our people criminalized, that wouldn't have seen our people shot at and tasered and dragged off our lands in the ways that we were. I think it is absolutely ridiculous that certainly in the middle of a pandemic that we're with, you know, businesses going bankrupt and people, you know, trying to find work in whatever means they can. And here we are spending $17 million, $90,000 a day to police a group that are peacefully occupying their lands.
You are listening to CKMS News featuring an interview with Skylar Williams, the spokesperson for the 1492 Landback Lane Reclamation Camp on Haudenosaunee Territory at Six Nations.
Now, you mentioned a pandemic, and I guess this is more of a two-part question. Like, what does support for this camp looked like, and how has the pandemic had an impact on support?
You know, like, this pandemic certainly is keeping people in their homes, is keeping people, you know, from being able to physically be here. But, like, there are still tons of folks that are cooking food, that are, you know, working behind the scenes, that are organizing, that are doing all of the work that needs to happen in order to see us be able to be here for the last 9 months. Like, we absolutely could not do it without the support that we do get. And for people that are coming, you know, are being really COVID conscious. You know, like, nobody wants to be, you know, the guy that brings, you know, the COVID blankets to Six Nations, you know? And so, like, it fills a lot of hearts with joy to see the folks that come out and make sure, you know, to wear masks, to do, you know, self-quarantine before, and all of the things that folks have been doing in order to make sure that that they're able to come here and come here in a good way.
Now, I've heard there's been a lot of donations coming in, materials as well as money. How has that been to deal with?
I mean, in terms of materials and stuff, I mean, amazing. I mean, we've been able to build two structures that, you know, we're utilizing as, you know, a meeting space and as well as a kitchen and space to eat and gather. And but in terms of, like, our GoFundMe that we put together for our criminal defense, it's been amazing. I mean, you know, to date, I think we're at just over $450,000 that, you know, people have pushed hard to make whatever sacrifice that we can make to see, you know, our people not dragged to jail, to not have everything rest on this one judge in Haldimand County, Ontario, to decide forever whether or not we have a claim to this land.
Right.
You know, a courthouse that is a stone's throw from the Grand River, which we claim 6 miles on either side of it. You know, that these squatters that squatted on that land where that very courthouse is on. You know, how this judge can be allowed to make that kind of a decision over our lands is absolutely ridiculous to not just me, but many, many people. And hopefully we can see in the appeal that this gets kicked back to being able to actually hear the history, to understand why it is that Six Nations people feel so connected to these lands. Mm-hmm.
Along those lines, you were just involved in a press conference the other day announcing a moratorium on development on the Haldimand Tract. I understand that there was a group of Confederacy chiefs there as well from the Haudenosaunee Confederacy Council.
Yeah, no, the Haudenosaunee came out, the Haudenosaunee Confederacy Council came out in a huge way on April 20th, which actually is the 15-year anniversary of the last time that, you know, our community came together to say absolutely no to development, and certainly not on the doorstep of our community. And so they came out on the 20th this year to say that there will be no development up and down the Grand River without the consent and at the very least the consultation of our community. And so, like, it is an absolutely amazing gift that they've given to not just us, but our entire, all of our nations here at Six Nations to really put a spur into our community to say, like, you know, there's 27,000 people here at Six Nations, you know, and there are plenty more besides me that are willing and anxious to be able to get out and do this exact same work that we're doing here.
What can people do to see that this moratorium is enforced, is put forward right up the Grand River?
I think that's putting pressure on your municipalities, that's putting pressure on the province to, you know, really see this, you know, like the Place to Grow Act, there's some legislation that was enacted that incentivizes, you know, the development, the further development, and the 200-year-old song and dance of, like, you know, trying to get new settlers to settle, you know, Indian country. Like, this is an absolutely ridiculous sentiment to us. And so to be able to put pressure on your municipalities to deal with whatever that's a, you know, how they issue permits, how they, and certainly when it comes to the doorstep of our community, that there needs to be a process that sees our community consulted with.
How has the Six Nations Band Council reacted to this protest and this announcement of the moratorium?
To date, they've been rather supportive of the topic around the moratorium. And so to be able to see our community consulted with, and you know what, like, we've not kind of tied ourselves to whether that's the Confederacy or Band Council or any other family in our community. Like, we've always said, like, this needs to be for everybody. Yeah. And if the knitting club comes together and says no to development of our lands, that needs to be respected. And so I don't care which family or faction you come from. Like, our community's been divided by the government for the last, you know, 250 years. And so for the government to take advantage of the fact that they've created these divisions and say, you know, well, we're not talking to you until your entire community's united. Well, you know what? You've spent the last 200 years dividing our community. Mm. And so if you're going to take advantage of that and further develop those lands without the consent or at least the consultation of our community, and not just one family or one faction of our community, but all of it. Right. And so if you want, if this is the monster that you've created, and trust me, I get it that Six Nations is absolutely a bureaucratic nightmare when it comes to dealing with this stuff. But if this is the product of the things that they've done. And so, but the taking advantage of the fact that they've done this over the last 200 years and are continuing to do that today in very, very obvious ways, at least those of us at Landback Lane have said over and over and over again, like, absolutely no, certainly when it comes to the doorstep of our community.
Right. What's next? What's coming up for you? I know there's been another lawsuit. There's been...
Yeah, being sued again. And so, yeah, we're going to continue to fight the civil case, which is the injunction, as well as this newest lawsuit, in which the developer has sued myself and 25 other people, as well as the federal government, the provincial government, the OPP, and the OPP commissioner. And so for them, absolutely, like, we're going to continue to fight as best we can in their courts and put our, you know, best foot forward in that regard and to make sure that, like, the courts actually are, you know, going to see our people be able to, you know, stay on these lands for the foreseeable future. And so and it's going to be about, you know, building and community and trying to, you know, bring that voice of unity. And because that's the thing, is it doesn't matter which family you come from. It doesn't matter whether you're Band Council, Confederacy, the Mohawk workers, the you know, the church group from, you know, that says that, you know, residential school was a positive thing for our people. Like, all of those people all understand that these are our lands. And so when it comes to lands, like, we are certainly unified in the stance that there needs to be some actual consultation with our community before our lands are further. And certainly while we're talking about UNDRIP in Ottawa right now, certainly when we're talking about the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People that requires free, prior, and informed consent of the development of our lands, we need that. Like, that doesn't come at the point of a gun. And so far, all we've seen from the government is the OPP's barrels. And so it is high time that our people need to not be staring down the barrel of a gun, but talking to each other. And because, like, we extended that hand, that invitation, on the very first day that we got here. And so for them to continue this violent action against our people, it is absolutely ridiculous that, you know, we're sitting here still over 9 months now and still have not seen a single word from the federal or provincial governments to try and deal with this in a, you know, peaceful, dignified way. That, you know, this idea of the honor of the crown that people keep talking about, it is absolutely ridiculous that here we are still 9 months later staring down the barrel of a gun. Is absolutely ridiculous, to not just me, and infuriating to not just me, but everybody at Six Nations.
You mentioned building community on Six Nations land, and now I understand there's a bunch of tiny homes now. I understand that garden beds are going in for the summer. It seems like you're kind of settling in for another...
Absolutely. And you know what? We're up to 11 tiny homes. We've got the two larger structures. You know what? Our people are digging in. You know, we're going to be planting. We've got, you know, 10 massive garden beds going in. We've got, you know, lots of people that are anxious to really get at making sure that this is a sustainable space for our people for the next, you know, like I say, the foreseeable future. So right, we're going to be here.
Well, thanks for your time today. And anything else you want to add?
No, I think you got it all there, bud.
Right. Well, thanks, Skyler.
You have been listening to CKMS News, featuring an interview with Skyler Williams, the spokesperson for the 1492 Landback Lane land reclamation camp on Haudenosaunee territory at Six Nations. To stay updated on the activities at the camp, check out 1492LBL on Twitter and 1492 Landback Lane on Facebook. For more information on the development moratorium and the history of land struggle at Six Nations, visit protectthetrack.com. To get in touch or donate to the camp, you can send an e-transfer to landbacksixnations@gmail.com or visit their GoFundMe, Legal Fund 1492 Landback Lane. This program is part of the Local Journalism Initiative Grant Project and is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Government of Canada, and the CKMS Newsroom. Check out the archived versions of this program and other episodes on radiowaterloo.ca/news and other stories commissioned under the Local Journalism Initiative at canada-info.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Radio Waterloo, and if you want to get in touch with comments or ideas about stories to cover, email us at news@radiowaterloo.ca. This is Dan Keller from the CKMS Newsroom. Thank you for listening.